So I just picked that part of that song.
Yes.
Just because that's my favorite part. And I think it would take like 3 minutes to get to that part in the song.
Right.
And the song starts off so like... the thing about this record, Prince is love sexy. Yeah.
The beginning of the Prince is putting out too many albums period.
Is that... the songs all bleed together, so nothing really stops or starts. Mm-hmm. If you bought it on CD, I remember this, one of my friends bought it on CD at the time, and it only had one track on it. You were required...
They were that committed to it.
You were required to listen to the entire disc if you wanted to hear. If you wanted to hear I Wish You Heaven...
You had to slog through.
You had to wait 40. You had to wait 40 minutes. Oh, yeah. And so, I really admire that about Prince. And I also am very happy. This is a brand new cassette in our life because Margie brought this over to the house this week, and with about 10 others that I have never had on cassette. Well, I used to have actually Love Sexy on cassette in the 80s, but you know, died. So now I have a fresh new copy.
Wow.
Can wash dishes and cook and stuff to Alphabet Street with the rapping by Cat.
I wish we had Parade.
It's my favorite song on the record. And my favorite part of the song when Cat raps. It has nothing to do with the show.
No.
Or any movies that are coming out this week. It's just my turn.
Why don't you explain what this show
theme
is?
Theme music for the week, and that's my... I chose Cat's rapping from Alphabet Street. This is Linoleum Knife. This is a podcast about movies where we tell you things about them. The current cinema, as they say in The New Yorker.
Yes.
And we are great at telling you these things because it's our job. This podcast is not our job. No one's paying us for this podcast.
No.
But our jobs are to be movie critics because you are Alonzo Duralde of therap.com, THEWRAP, like it's a rap. Not like the way Cat just rapped.
No, different other kind of rap.
You're a different rapping, like Christmas rapping.
Snack rapping.
Like rapping a film that is done.
Yes.
You are also on What the Flick? An internet television program.
Correct.
With other folks who are Ben Mankiewicz and Christy Lemire and Matt Ashety.
Yes.
And you tell people about movies on there.
I do.
As well.
It's all and then, the time with the movies.
I also wanted to be clear that last week when you were on With the Flick, you wore a really great Gene Seberg t-shirt that I gave you.
You did.
And that people on the YouTube were giving you compliments on. Which is crazy that anyone is complimenting you on YouTube because normally that's the place where... souls go to die.
Yeah, went to die.
And
you are Dave White.
Yes.
Film critic for movies.com.
Yes.
Also a contributor to Slake Magazine and KCRW's.
Which has nothing to do with movies.
No, but still.
But that's what I do. And we're talking about...
We normally tape this show on a Sunday morning.
And
there's a whole different vibe. You know, the sun is coming through the window. And
we're feeling fresh.
We're having our respective caffeinated beverages. We're taping this one on a Saturday night because of various scheduling reasons. And it's kind of like when Venus Flytrap would come into WKRP and do his, you know... His night sound.
Certainly sort of you're show. Joking.
I just mean, you know, it's a nighttime.
Are you feeling? Are you
it's a
feeling?
Nighttime groove.
Are you feeling smooth right now?
You know.
Are you feel?
We're bringing it down a little bit.
Should I have played a Quiet Storm?
We're
kind of jam.
We are
opening music.
We're running with the shadows of the night.
Do you feel more...
maybe you should light a candle.
Do you feel more... Oh, here's the thing. I was at the New Beverly Theater until about an hour ago. And I was seeing the film that is going to be my DVD recommendation. And they showed us a trailer before the movie. Mm-hmm. The New Beverly, for those of you who live outside of Los Angeles, is a repertory cinema. And so they showed...
That is owned by Quentin Tarantino, right?
I don't know if he owns it.
He holds the lease or something.
He gave them a lot of money to fix it up.
Yeah. Because
before...
It was kind of a rat trap.
It was a hole, yeah. And, I mean, they still showed awesome stuff, but it was a...
There were stains on the screen.
You had to be really sort of not concerned about dirt and
mildew,
bad stuff, and yeah, you really had to be devoted to what they're showing. Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, you know, it's like that's, you know, that was the way it was there. But now it's clean and nice, and yes, everything's great, and there's new seats and new screen and new sound. Like every, I believe, and my understanding is that he had a lot to do with that.
Yes,
I don't know if he owns it.
I don't know what his exact.
I don't know what the story is.
But he's really involved with it somehow.
Anyway, they showed us.
I got to see Kill Bill, the whole bloody affair there.
They showed us a trailer for The Hunger.
Oh.
And they said
Hunga Dunga.
They said Hunga Dunga. The timeless. The narrator of the trailer was the timeless beauty of Catherine Deneuve.
Mm-hmm.
The elegance of David Bowie. Mm-hmm. The open sensuality of Susan Sarandon.
I.e., she will show her boobs in a movie.
And so I'm just wondering if, because we're doing this at night, if you're feeling like you are the open sensuality of Alonso Duralde.
The open sore.
Is that how you feel? Is that how you feel about like talking on the mic at night?
I mean, do you not sense a difference?
Nothing.
Really?
No.
No difference at
Other
all?
Than that, it's 8:30 and it's... This is the time of night when I should be on the couch.
Winding down, heading for bed.
Near falling asleep time.
I don't know. This just, there's something about the, you know, this is like Baywatch Nights. There's something about...
You're very weird.
The late hour and the lighting. Well,
first of all, it's not late.
But it's, well, but given that we usually...
It's the nighttime.
...record this show at 10 a.m. You... That we're doing it at 8 p.m., it feels different. It feels different. It's not a bad thing.
It's no. I just think it's funny that you've got this whole sort of like... Hello, lady. This is kind of. You have that look on your face. You have a weird look on your face right now.
It's the right time of the night for podcasting. I don't know. It just feels different. It's like when you are in the school play or you're performing at like the function for parents, right, and you're there at night.
You're at school at night.
Yeah. And it's like you're never at school at night. You're always there in the daytime.
I used to be a school teacher, and I was there.
Oh, I'm talking about as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, so when you're in a familiar circumstance, but suddenly it's at a different time or there's something, you know, weird going on, it just, you know, you notice it. And so I'm just noticing.
I just think it's always weird that you've got your sexy face on.
Baby, I always have sexy face on. That's why you married me. Because I've always got this going on.
I married you because you can cook an adequate meatloaf
on
a Sunday for dinner.
That works
too. That was really a
that was
kind
the
of
clincher.
What it boiled down to.
Okay.
Yeah, I was like, oh, meatloaf.
Not letting this one get away.
No. Please, no one else I'd ever dated before you could cook a thing or wanted to cook a thing. Well, I mean, you still don't cook very much of anything, but I mean, you're real good at the meatloaf.
Thank you.
It would be great if you weren't going to be gone all day tomorrow and you could actually make one.
Mm.
Then I wouldn't have to cook Sunday dinner.
Well, I will when things slow down.
Yeah. So the Twilight.
Oh, we're going right into it.
The Twilights are here.
Yes.
They're here for the last time. The Twilights. Well,
but not really the last time.
We think, I mean, for, okay.
Officially.
For now. Officially, it's time. Done. And until Summit figures out a way to make the next step and do the Renesmee films.
The Renesmee conundrum.
The Renesmee conundrum, as I said in my review.
Yeah, I think with that whole, you know, because once you start doing the Twilight Saga, You know, that opens the door.
You can do anything you want.
Yeah.
And Stephanie Meyer has to do is say,
sure,
where do I sign?
And where's that check?
Where's that check?
Yeah.
I'm not writing anything anymore.
And you know, because Summit has made untold billions on this thing. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think they're going to
Because these films are so good.
Sink back into that good night.
Such good movies.
Bill Condon has eaten pancakes in this house.
He has.
We always that is feel the thing. Need a, to, yeah, there's to a, disclaim.
A little bit of a disclaimer. You are buddies with Jack.
Morrissey, yes. Bill's partner.
Technically, I guess I'm Jack's friend, too. Yeah, sure. You guys hang, though. You guys go out to dinner and sure. stuff. I'm always like, you have a good time at dinner, I'm going to bed. And yes, they've both been here. Christmas parties, made the pancakes, delivered them to the mouth of the director
right.
of the last two Twilight films.
Jack, incidentally, hosts the that Team Jack podcast, which we mention yes. every week.
So, and I do believe that it's important that we say these things because it's sort of journalistically irresponsible, not to mention it somewhere, yeah.
We're not like super tight bros, He never gave us a kidney or anything. But he has been in this apartment and consumed pancakes made by Dave White.
And to that end, it doesn't really matter to me that happened. Because I'm going to tell you what I think about these movies anyway.
Right.
And he's not responsible for the first three.
No.
Now let's go back a little bit because I have strong feelings about this thing that I don't care about. I could not give two rat's asses about the Twilight films in general, the story itself, the books, the mania of it concerned with.
We do recommend, if you're a fan of the movies, however, that you pick up our friend Robert Abele's new book.
Yes.
Which I don't know what it's called.
Whatever it's called.
But it's all about all the Twilight
movies. It's called Twilight book.
Twilight movie book. Time
yeah.
book.
Robert
Abele, A-B-E-L-E, the talented guy.
The mania is all I'm really concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
I like to see the location of insanity and in the culture. Like, I want to watch that happen. I'm back when Jen Yamato was my film critic at movies.com,
mm-hmm.
I was just... she would go off
conduit.
She would go off on Twilight, and I would just be like holding my hands together and be like, "Tell me more, say more," because that girl, really, really, really into the Twilight films.
Yeah, I mean,
and the books and the everything.
But still,
an adult,
but
not a crazy person.
But she's a functioning adult, and like, it bears differentiation.
Yes.
It's not like she's camping out at the premiere and never going to get in. She's not that crazy British lady that did that YouTube video about.
Yeah, no. I'm not suggesting on any level that Jen is a lunatic or a dummy.
I'm just saying she's the mild end of the spectrum.
She is the thing that no one ever talks about. She's the intelligent grown-up who...
Nonetheless,
also loves this thing.
Right.
And you know what? I'm an intelligent grown-up who loves to watch Adventure Time on Cartoon Network. Have you watched that show?
Sometimes, yeah.
That is a show for crazy people,
It's for high people.
Also for high people.
High people and children.
Yeah. In any case...
so much good
the things that I like... Things that I personally love mm-hmm. in the culture, a lot of people think are for knuckleheads and dummies.
No, I've seen every episode of the current iteration of Degrassi.
Yeah. I listen to heavy metal. And that apparently is the music of idiots. That's what they say.
Yeah.
That's what they say. It's like, oh, metalhead dummies, That's the way it was always. When I was a kid in the 80s, punk rock was the smart music. If you were into punk rock, you were smart. If you were into metal, you were stupid, which is why I didn't listen to metal for a very long time, because there was a definite cultural divide. And I was, I was in the hardcore punk rock camp, not in the metal camp. And those two worlds didn't really meet. They kind of came together later when speed metal came along and thrash. But, I'm completely off the topic now. Let's go back to Twilight.
Twilight.
So the first film, I was interested in because Catherine Hardwicke, you know, directed it. And I found it interesting that, you know, Catherine Hardwicke is a filmmaker who focuses a lot on teenage girls in trouble. She directed 13. She directed The Nativity Story and then Twilight, which if you take a line, you can connect all three of those films.
Troubled teenage girls.
Troubled teenage girls. Teenage girls with extraordinary circumstances.
In larger than life circumstances.
Thrust upon them, you know, or that they willingly chose.
Right.
In any case, teenage girls with some stuff going on and how they had to have to deal with that. Mm-hmm. So the first movie to me was actually sort of interesting on that level. The next two were buckets of barf. Let me be more alliterative. Boring buckets of barf. All about which one of these hot guys should I choose?
Yeah.
Which one will it be?
Let's take a moment.
Why don't you guys fight over me for a little bit?
Yeah, let's take a moment to parse out.
Hang on. I'm gonna make my decision in the next movie.
let's take a second to parse out.
So let's just finish this movie.
Why this is such a crazy...
And then in the next movie, I'll make my decision. So they spend two entire films.
Yes. Because, again, it's like, it's for readers who want... Here's this... Okay, you have this personality-free girl who, like, goes to live with her divorced dad, not because... You know, she has to, or because, like, her mom wants her out of the way. No, because she and the dad get along well, and the dad and the mom get along well, and the mom has a new boyfriend, but everybody gets along well, everything's great, la 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 la. She moves to a new town, where, of course, immediately upon attending the new high school, she is immediately embraced by all the popular kids who love her the second she shows up.
She's pretty.
And then...
That helps.
She winds up torn between two guys... And becoming at the center of a centuries-old conflict between two...
A supernatural war.
Powerful supernatural races.
She is...
She is so
She's the hell of Troy.
Yes. Yeah. That she suddenly becomes the crux of everything. And the center of everyone's attention, which is every teen girl's dream.
Well, yeah. It's my dream, too.
I hate this stuff so much.
I want to be the center of everyone's attention.
God, I hate these.
As long as I can be left alone a lot.
I guess I was between reviewing gigs, so I didn't have to see New Moon. But then I did see Eclipse.
They're both boring buckets of barf.
Eclipse was pretty assy, although it did have the cool moment where they're in the tent and... Wolf Boy has to keep her warm because vampire guy's all bone chilly.
Yeah.
Whatever. And then finally we get to the Bill Condon movies, the last two.
And here's what I like about his films.
Yeah.
These two movies taken together as one unit.
Right.
He is smarter than the material.
Yes.
And you can feel him like...
Like how do I give them what they want?
Up, like he's Atlas,
and turning and he's into holding up the world. Do.
Yeah, he faithfully adapted these books, and at the same time, made them wittier and smarter and funnier than they apparently had any reason to
right.
be. Furthermore, you can tell he's fascinated with gross stuff as well, like bloody weird stuff. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, the opening credits of the second one are all just sort of like blood.
It's worth noting for people that don't know Condon's career. I mean, you know, you may know him as the director of Dreamgirls and Kinsey and Gods and Monsters. And Gods and Monsters, of course, is about James Whale, who made the Frankenstein movies. But even before that, like, Condon has a long-standing fascination with horror. His directorial debut, I believe, was the Candyman sequel, right?
I'd have to go look that up, but I think you're correct.
And he also wrote the films Strange Invaders and Strange Behavior back in the early 1980s. So, I mean, he's a genre guy. Like, as much as you get Catherine Hardwicke as the teen girl angst director, you get Condon as the stylish horror guy.
Right. And what these films have lacked up till now was any connection to the world of horror.
Yeah.
You know,
it's about vampires and werewolves, but it's not And not in any way that we've ever seen them portrayed the in first, literature yeah, or film.
The first three films are about, again, they're about vampires and werewolves, and they have nothing to do with horror. And so what he did was he took the last two movies and gave you, in the first one, this very sort of Cronenbergian, you know, body horror thing where, like, she's growing a monster baby inside of her, like Samantha Eggar in The Brood.
And sucking the life out of her.
And, you know, she has to drink these, like, blood smoothies. And then
somehow getting the blood into her stomach is going to, like...
She finally gets to have sex with her vampire husband, and they destroy stuff. You know, like, the whole idea of the libido, you know, ruining everything that it touches. I really like that element of the last movie too. And this one, the thing I love is the thing that wasn't in the book.
Yes, which we're not going to talk about.
But here's what happens. The thing that is not in the book happens. And it is the grossest, most violent, most insane making thing that has ever been in a Twilight film.
And that's the most exhilarating.
If it were in another movie, if it were in an action film or a horror film, you would sit through that sequence and go, whoa, that's awesome, which is what happens when you're sitting through
this sequence.
And the crowd that I saw it with, which was a bunch of Twilight super fans, they went ballistic.
Oh, yeah.
And
the only press person in my screening. It was all fangirls.
Okay.
And a few boys.
They went out of their heads.
Not angrily. No, they were loving it. And I think they weren't even processing it. Like, oh my God, they've deviated from the sacred text from that Mormon who writes these books. You know, yeah, they were totally getting into it and loving it.
Right.
And the movie very skillfully has its cake and eats it too.
Uh-huh.
In that it subverts the text, but stays true to the text in a really smart way, and in a way that doesn't feel like a cheat because it fits the rules that have been established in the kooky universe.
It actually gives the haters something to like.
Yes.
And it gives the likers a curveball that they didn't ask for that they will also like.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. So it is, you know.
I still don't care.
No.
About this thing, and in the I'll tell you the ending, the last like 2 seconds or 20 seconds or whatever it was, where, and this is not really a spoiler because all's well that ends well, right. and they're like sitting in a field, right?
In the field, and the field that like Hayden Christensen and Natalie Portman are in whatever Star Wars movie that is,
and she basically opens up her mind cloud and pulls like video clips down out of the mind cloud and transfers them to his brain.
No, no. What it is
remember that time when we met?
They
remember that time when we got married?
They mention early on in the film
that her
power that she's always had and that she now has more of now that she's a vampire.
Yes.
Kept him from being able to read her thoughts the way he does to other people.
Yeah.
So basically what happens at the end is that she learns a way to let him in.
Sure.
If you know what I mean.
Here's the other thing I like about this film.
What's that?
The creepy Jacob the werewolf imprinting on the baby.
God.
And
luckily, she's not a baby for long.
Selecting her as his future mate.
Yeah.
Like from the Joy Book.
It's like,
and what he realizes is that, like, when he was into Bella, it wasn't her. It was like, the way we said, the call is coming from inside her uterus.
Yes. It was like her eggs he was into.
Yeah.
I know. What's really bizarre is baby Renesmee, who...
Like, I really like that, though.
Luckily, is eventually...
I like the freaky... And I love the freaky digital baby.
That's what I was about to say. She's eventually played by, like, a series of young actresses because she grows up really fast.
But not at first.
Oh, and she's a digital baby, though. They do something crazy to her face.
She has, like, a grown-up face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She looks like something you would get from the Danbury Mist. It's really disturbing.
And I liked that it was really disturbing. Because the minute they show her face, I was like, not a baby.
But I wasn't sure.
The baby from the Uncanny Valley.
But I wasn't sure if it was disturbing in a we meant it this way or just a.
Oh, they meant it that way.
But I wasn't sure if it was just like the way that the digital werewolves always look stupid. Like, I mean, just digital baby looks stupid too, you know?
No. I think this was seriously an intentional thing.
Okay.
Like, check it out, everybody. Creepy baby.
Relax. She won't be a baby for long.
She's a monster baby. Who looks creepy.
She'll be a 12-year-old girl in about 18 hours.
Right. And then 18 hours after that, she's going to marry the werewolf. She's a newborn. And she's getting married. So, yeah. You know, why not go see this film?
Sure.
Why not go see this movie?
You could do worse.
I'm very, very also, I'm also very, very happy that I no longer have to take a lot of crap from super fans who hate me for not being a super fan.
Right.
And fanboys who hate me for not hating it along with them.
Yeah, there is the Twilight hate out there is...
misogynistic.
It is misogynistic.
It is utterly, it is nothing but misogyny.
It is teenage boys and their mental equivalents who are all angry that girls got into their secret... clubhouse, you know, of fanboy geekdom and ruined Comic-Con for them by storming Hall H.
Right.
And, you know, it's like, just let it go.
There's actually a very funny line, which I consider to be sort of a shout out to the haters.
Oh, what's that?
In the film, when Jacob is talking about the two helper vampires named like Stefan and Vladimir or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's like, seriously, Dracula number one and Dracula number two. And he makes the face. He makes their face, that wide-eyed sort of like, kind of face.
They're like super Eastern European vampires.
And that whole, hello, my name is Twilight and I am a Dracula thing that went around a couple years ago.
Right.
That is, I swear that had to have been the inspiration for that little moment in the film.
I'll ask Jack.
I don't know if it was, and I don't actually care if I'm right or not.
You just
I feel that way, and that's what is important to me. Yeah.
Also opening this week in limited release is one of my favorite movies in a long, long time, Silver Linings Playbook.
Okay, can you explain to me, well, tell them what it's about, and then tell me why it's one of your favorite movies in a long, long time, because I just sort of, I liked it.
Uh-huh.
But clearly we're
more enthusiastic.
You're a lot more enthusiastic.
Well, it's weird. I feel weird talking about this movie, because when I saw it, I went in totally cold. I didn't know anything about it. I knew who was in it, and that was about it.
Me too.
And it's also a movie where when you describe what it is and what it's about, it sounds terrible.
I'm the wrong person to ask. Because you could tell me a movie's about anything.
I guess.
And I'll be like, okay, sure. That sounds like something I would watch.
All right. Well, here goes. It's a new film from David O. Russell. Stars Bradley Cooper, which is already kind of a demerit.
You can tell me the movie's about anything, but don't tell me it stars Bradley Cooper.
Right.
Because at that moment I will say, oh, so it's The Words. or it's that, what's that Sandra Bullock? What's that Sandra Bullock movie he was in?
All About Steve.
All About Steve, yeah. Like
Limitless.
Bradley Cooper's track record is not
it's very spotty.
Good,
but
yeah.
He's real good in this, but more on that in a moment. So Bradley Cooper plays a bipolar substitute teacher who has just gotten out of a mental institution after having a violent episode upon discovering his wife with another man. He is remanded to the custody of his parents, played by Robert De Niro.
Remanded?
Yes.
That's a good word.
Thank you.
Venus flytrap.
Robert De Niro, another red flag, usually. And Jackie Weaver.
Lately, Robert De Niro is a red flag lately because he's become lazy.
Yes. His parents have their own craziness. His dad particularly is OCD, but has managed to sort of channel his crazy obsessions into being a Philadelphia Eagles super fan, and thus masking everything as, you know, superstition and, oh, no, you have to hold this handkerchief and not touch this, and this person has to be sitting here on the sofa or they're going to lose, you know. Cooper is insistent that he's going to get his wife back by adopting a positive attitude and improving his life, even though she currently has a restraining order against him. His friends, the unhappily married John Ortiz and Julia Stiles, set him up with Jennifer Lawrence as a young widow of a police officer who has had problems of her own. Indeed, she just went through this whole sort of maniacal nymphomaniac moment, but is now over it and is improving her life through dance, and manages to talk Bradley Cooper into being her partner in a ballroom dance competition. So yeah, this all sounds so gooey and twee, and you know, this joke got cut from What the Flick, but my thing has been like, imagine how awful this movie would have been if Edward Burns had directed it.
And how.
But it is smart and funny, and my other sort of joke about it, it's a screwball comedy about real screwballs. Like, these are people who have genuine mental illness. But, you know, but the movie is compassionate about them and likes them.
It's not exploitive.
Not at all.
Of that. It's reductive because you only see them in both of them in utter manic states all the time. Like,
there are some hints of depression.
Not much. Yeah, I wrote in my review, depression is for Abilify commercials. That's, you don't want to watch that.
You know, but as again, Robert Abley was saying today, he goes, you know, it's a movie that offers the possibility of a happy ending for people who don't get happy endings in movies, and why not?
Right.
It's a movie that I went in not knowing anything. I was just constantly surprised by it. I was surprised by how good Bradley Cooper was, how good Robert De Niro is.
I think Jennifer Lawrence is really terrific.
She's terrific. That was less of a surprise because I think she's a really good actress. But yeah, she was great. Chris Tucker is good in this.
Yeah.
And he's always irritating.
I like Chris Tucker.
Ugh. Did The Fifth Element even?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I love The Fifth Element. What are you talking about?
He drives me up the wall. Anyway, this movie charmed the pants off me. I thought it was just sweet and funny, and I enjoyed it so much, and it's
I liked it a lot myself. I laughed a lot. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was sort of a...
I saw it with an audience, and you didn't. That might have made a difference.
Well, I mean, it's a romantic comedy that, you know, takes its pacing and its spirit from the very old school romantic comedies of like the past, the screwball ones with the, you know, the
madcap era.
His Girl Friday kind of stuff, and that's great. I mean, all you have to do is try to be like that, and I'm and you've got me on your side. Because so many romantic comedies now are just so dead inside,
right,
and harmful to my existence, and just toxic on almost every level. So the fact that this one takes subject matter that would normally be relegated to an Oscar drama, mm-hmm. turns it into crazy comedy, you know. Builds its love relationship on a framework of other problematic people who sort of support them and encourage them really to be and continue and enable them to continue being dysfunctional with each other and with the people who are in their world, to the point where, you know, you have a cop played by Dash Mahoke who seems to be hovering around the action for the entire film, just waiting for one of them to fall apart so that he can swoop in and be like, I'm here to help, you know? Like,
yeah, he magically appears whenever, like, Bradley Cooper has some meltdown.
It's a clan of messed up people who are not related to one another or who are related to one another and who push this all forward and push the two people together.
Yeah.
So I appreciated that. I appreciated this the blatant strangeness of this world. Mm-hmm. It wasn't exploitive. It wasn't quirky in that indie way. It was just weird.
Yeah.
And
loony.
In the same way that the family in The Fighter was. Mm-hmm. I feel like this, the family in The Fighter and the family in this movie are very similar in terms of they're all wrong in the head, like, for one reason or another. but they all sort of work together. and even when they're confronted with the things that are wrong with them, they aren't backing down. Like, they double down on what their agenda is.
It's a rare movie where people are yelling at each other, but they're yelling something that's interesting.
Yeah.
Like, it matters. Like, it's
and
not
they never just, stop yelling. Yeah, they're yelling at each other for the entire movie.
It's not one of those lazy movies where, like, oh, I'll just have them yell at each other. Yeah. Like, it's like a musical number that carries the plot forward. Yeah. You know, it's yelling that means something to the overall story.
So I had a good time. I just think that structurally it's very conventional.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a get me to the church on time film, but it's definitely a, you know, we have to do this.
It's a big game movie.
We have to do this thing at the end that's going to save us or break us.
Yeah.
And
the ballroom dancing is the big game.
There's no question that they're going to be happily ever after at the end.
Mm-hmm.
There's just nothing. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
The film doesn't ever leave you feeling, unsafe.
Right.
In that possibility. So, you know, I would like a little more peering over the cliff, just for my own taste, because I like more danger in people's lives in film, not in my own.
I'm gonna backtrack and disagree with you a little. I think there were times where I wasn't sure that.
But then the movie would have been over.
No, they dangle other possibilities. And so, you know.
Not for very long.
Well, but enough for me anyway.
All right.
I thought there was something.
I don't know.
Anyway, I really love this movie.
I liked it a lot.
Check it out.
I like it a lot.
Yeah, okay. It's open in limited release this weekend. It's going to go wider on Thanksgiving for Thanksgiving week. So be on the lookout. Silver Linings Playbook. It is, they are already grooming it. So you'll be hearing more about that one.
Yeah.
Also opening this week is Price Check, in probably exceedingly limited release.
Very limited release. Is it on demand?
I don't know that it is.
I think it is on demand.
Maybe it's on
actually.
Demand. It might be.
I think you can get it on demand, like on Amazon.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure about that. It's not a great movie, but it's got a great Parker Posey lead performance.
Yes.
She's the star of the film, and although she's not
the lead character.
The movie's not about her technically, but she's the star of the film.
When she's on screen, it's about her.
It's all about her. Yep. The whole movie's about her. She drives everything in the film.
And you're waiting for her to come back when she's not on screen.
She's doing everything you love Parker Posey for doing throughout Parker Posey's entire career of being Parker Posey.
Yes.
There are some deviations in the career of Parker Posey where she goes off and does dramatic stuff like Broken English, or that very crazy, awesome, you know, character arc on Louis.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, you know what you're getting from Parker Posey, and you want that.
Yes.
You know, we talk about this. I wrote about this in my
book.
I saw You've Got Mail just because she was in it.
Yes.
And
you're getting white sass.
Yes. And in a way that feels like the person might be a little unhinged and have serious problems, but they never crack.
Right.
You know, her characters, they never crack. They can shriek and roll around on the floor like she does in this movie, and you're still on her side. Like, the minute the craziest thing she does in this film the boss of the Long Island branch of a discount grocer's pricing department, she exhibits like unhinged behavior, and every single thing that she does, you think, well, yeah, you're right. Everyone is a jerk. Everyone is stupid. You are the only person that makes any sense. It doesn't matter that you're shrieking at everyone and calling them horrible, profane names.
You're Parker Posey.
You're Parker Posey, and you're right. And so, so as a film itself, it's sort of, you know, only of interest in that it's
a platform for her.
Well, that's not where I was going, but yes. But it's only of interest, like, to the culture in that it's yet another work is hell sort of film.
Yeah, but it doesn't even really commit to that.
No, it doesn't. But But it wants to, and you can feel like it wants to. You know, it wants to be in the tradition of The Office or
Office Space
or The Devil Wears Prada.
Or Horrible Bosses.
Media projects that to one degree or another are good or bad, but all about how crappy it is in the United States to be an employee now.
Right.
Where
wage slavery.
Where you are, where it's not just like, it used to be a zine in the 90s called Temp Slave that I used to get. And it was all about these, it was written by people, it was a collection, each issue was a collection of people who would send in their like horror stories about being a temp. And I was like, well, you know, aren't you lucky you're not a temp? You know, was often sort of the theme of the zine. Well, now full-time employees
are treated like temps,
and you're often lucky now to be a full-time employee.
Yeah, and often full-time employees,
not a contract laborer.
Or
a part-timer.
Exactly.
Or enforced freelancer.
Most of the labor force is like temps in that they aren't given benefits and they're that kind of stuff. And then if you are a full-timer, you know, because you're so lucky to be one, they treat you extra crappy.
Yeah.
And strangely enough, that's actually the theme of a really good Parker Posey movie from the 90s,
Clock Watchers. Yeah.
Which is almost like Polanski-ish in its representation of the hellish workplace.
Yeah.
And a much better movie than this one.
So if you even half like Parker Posey, watch this because you'll love her.
Watch it when it comes on cable so you can fast forward to the parts that she's not in. Because otherwise you're stuck with this whole plot about Eric Mabius and his family and who cares.
Right.
You just want her.
Yeah, you don't
want
to
see her.
You really don't care about what happens to him at all. Yeah.
Okay, speaking of, we have Thanksgiving is coming up. We are out of town next week. We have pre-recorded our holiday special with Manola Dargis of the New York Times.
Yep.
And that's going to be going up on the Monday after Thanksgiving, so it will be a little late for you people.
She disagreed with me when I told her that she was the boss of all the film critics everywhere.
Well, what does she know? She's totally the boss. Anyway, so if you're a Monday morning commuter, the show will be going up a little late next week because of the holiday, so sorry about that.
Not that sorry, really.
Well, we're just letting you know. Do we want to pre-review some of the big stuff?
We haven't talked about Anna Karenina yet.
Oh, indeed. All right. Well, I did not see it, but tell us about Anna Karenina.
Well, you know the story of Anna Karenina. She...
Poor mountaineer, barely kept her family fed.
Yes. Then one day she was shooting at some food.
Mm-hmm.
And she met Count Vronsky.
Mm-hmm.
He came bubbling up from the ground. I'll stop that right there. So she's, married to
Karenin.
Karenin. And it's a loveless marriage. He's played by Jude Law. Anna Karenina is played by Keira Knightley. And I have to stop for a moment and digress here. The various ways in the world this week, I have heard people refer to this title.
Oh boy, this will be rich.
A Christian of the Schmoes.
Oh boy,
he called it Anna Karenina, and I said, he goes, "Did you see Anna Karenina?" And he caught himself, immediately after. Saying it, he knew he'd said it incorrectly, but I immediately launched and I said, "That's right. Me and Larry the Cable Guy, we just went, couldn't see that old girl Anna Karenina."
Had he seen the movie? Don't they pronounce it correctly in the movie?
I don't remember if he said he had seen it or not.
I see. Okay.
Anyway, it was just funny. And then, while I was standing in line for the Twilight screening the other night, there was an Anna Karenina screening at the same theater, and the person herding the patrons into that line over there kept yelling, "Over here for Anna Karenina." "Over here for Anna Karenina." And I was like, "Anna Karenina's here? I love you in Viva Savi."
Jinx.
So yeah, Anna Karenina is a French actress of the French New Wave.
And pop star,
and former love of Jean-Luc Godard. Anna Karenina is the name.
The novel by Tolstoy.
Is the story. So anyway, okay. So, loveless marriage, she meets Vronsky, played by Aaron Johnson.
Aaron Taylor
Johnson. Who's now Aaron Taylor Johnson because he married the British artist Sam Taylor Wood. And I don't know what the how the names are being.
There's a whole lot of hyphens redistributed going on there.
Here. Yeah. And their love is forbidden, of course. It's Russian society. So it's not just that it's a scandal. It is the ruin, not of him.
Oh, no, never.
But of her.
Right.
Not only did she will she lose her position, but she will lose every single thing, her children, every single thing that she has in life. She will lose it. She doesn't seem to get this, though, and has to be told, you know, over and over, but she doesn't care because she is headlong into this, you know, relationship. Now, the film itself is obviously it's a shortened version of this, you know, million-page book by Leo Tolstoy. But this adaptation is also smallered in a very, very real way. I walked in not knowing what I was going to see. I walked in expecting, well, Joe Wright directed Pride and Prejudice and Atonement. So he's done these period films before. Mm-hmm. And I've enjoyed both Pride and Prejudice and I enjoyed Atonement. I really kind of love Pride and Prejudice because it's upbeat and sort of very sort of like energetic.
I didn't see it. I hated Atonement.
And what they do in this movie is they take this giant epic and they transcribe it. They shrink it down and set it literally in a theater, so that the backdrops are painted murals and the sets are made of wood, and you can see actors standing behind them, and you can see actors standing in the wings, and you can see actors standing on the rafters, and you can see stagehands sweeping up in front of the stage, and you can see the footlights at the front of the stage, and you can. You can see that the snow is actually little bits of paper confetti, and the train, the big train that fits into the story so tragically because, as you know, unless you are someone who has never paid attention in any English class that you were ever in your entire life, she hurls herself in front of a train at the end and commits suicide. But this is a toy train in this movie. A toy train. And you can't do that. You can't commit suicide by throwing yourself in front of a toy train. In my review, I said, a train that would fit Stuart Little. You cannot kill yourself with that train.
Does she knock over some like fake painted trees too next to the little
track? No, when she does it, it's a giant mock-up train.
I see.
But when they're showing the train moving, it's a little toy train. Oh, yeah.
God.
When they go skating, it's on this fake, you know, sheet of fake ice that's on the floor in front of the stage, and everyone just sort of scoots around. Every time they are in the scene, other people like freeze.
Oh,
well, it's unbelievably distracting. Like
the worst of avant-garde theater.
It is unbelievably distracting and bothersome. Like every time Vronsky is given his coat by a servant, he sort of choreographically twirls into the jacket and then twirls out of it. I wanted to punch this film in the face over and over and over again.
I don't want to see that.
The only time it leaves the theater is when they are dealing with the Levin storyline. Mm-hmm. Because he is a gentleman farmer and he's out in the world. And so he goes off.
He's removed from Moscow society.
He's removed from Moscow society. And the overt arch theatricality of their lives.
Right. Get it?
Yeah. So when
theater?
You see him actually walk out of the theater into the real world.
Oh, brother.
To his own life. And when he has to come back into the theater for their lives, he's, you know, completely out of place and he's uncomfortable. Eventually, Kitty has to leave the theater to go to his life. And in the end, if you don't want to know how this ends after she kills herself by throwing herself in front of the train.
I think after 200 years, you're allowed a spoiler.
Here's what happens at the end. For the next 15 seconds, turn down your volume if you don't want to hear the last scene in this film, post Anna Karenina's suicide. Ready? Turn it down.
Go.
the real world comes in and takes over the theater, and the grass grows over everything in the theater. The natural spiritual world wins. Get it? Get it? Get it? Get it?
I thought the communists won.
Get it? Well, they did. In real life, they all got their heads chopped off.
They fled to France and became waiters. And
so, the, so yeah.
This sounds awful.
Again, I wanted to punch this movie in the face. And in fact, the longer I, the more distance I get from it, the more I hate it.
I've already made this a DVD recommendation, or I would have done it this week to tie into this. If you want to see a great Russian piece of literature done in a small theater, in an intentionally theatrical style, you're much better off with Louis Malle's Vanya on 42nd Street, which there's a lovely...
Which I've never seen.
There's a what? Really?
I've never seen it.
Oh, man, we got to watch it.
It's, what me?
I'm stunned. I thought you had seen it.
This, please, this is an indie film from the 90s that I have every reason to have missed because I lived in Dallas, Texas.
I'm sure it showed there for like a week.
It might have.
Anyway, you have to watch it. It's great.
Well, okay, and I will.
It's the movie that made me really notice Julianne Moore. But anyway,
don't act like I haven't seen Gone with the Wind.
No, but I would be less surprised if you hadn't seen Gone with the Wind than you hadn't seen a 90s art film. What else was there to do in Dallas in the 90s?
I went to see bands a lot of the time.
Yeah. Anyway, it's great.
I was seeing Bikini Kill in a barn in Fort Worth is what I was doing.
It's really cool because I think they were actually staging this play in this like crumbling Broadway theater that was on the verge of being torn down, and they decided to film it.
Right.
They were doing it in front of audiences of like 7 people. Like they would invite friends to come see it.
Oh, I see.
And so then they were like, well, let's film it. And they did it. And it's what's really amazing about it is that, you know, the movie begins with the actors arriving and greeting each other and hugging and blah 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 and, you know, taking off their coats and whatever. And then like Larry Pine is sitting down next to Brooke Smith. And they're talking, and it's very seamlessly like it's like all the other conversations of the actors greeting. And then you realize, oh, the play has started. Like the conversation they're having is in character, and like this is the beginning of Uncle Vanya. But you have, you know, it sneaks up on you. It just seems like it's another conversation between two of the actors in the theater, you know. And then it just kind of goes from there, and it's all very sparse sets and very kind of natural lighting, and it's great. Anyway, moving on. Should we talk about some of next week's movies since we're not doing a show next week?
Let's just catch up when we come back.
No, let's do Life of Pi because that's going to be big. And
all right, looks real nice.
It looks real nice.
I think the tiger is God.
I thought he was the tiger.
What?
I don't know. They throw you a real metaphorical loop at you at the end of this movie. It's not even worth getting into. There's this really annoying...
Ta-da! The end of our review.
There's this really annoying bracketing material with... Who's the Indian actor?
Irfan Khan.
Irfan Khan telling a blocked novelist played by Rafe Spall this amazing story that happened to him when he was a teenager. And then we go into the actual story, which is far more interesting, about this this Indian teenager and his family has a zoo, and then they move to Canada, and they're on a boat with...
They bought a zoo.
Yeah, they own a zoo. They're on a boat with all the zoo animals, and there's a storm, and the boat capsizes, and the boy ends up on a life raft.
The boy and the tiger had to climb up through the upside-down ship
to get to the hull. Gene Hackman. And then the tiger survives, and a hyena, and an orangutan, and a zebra.
Right.
And it gets complicated. It...
I thought the tiger was supposed to be God.
I don't know. The way
Jesus is the lion in the Narnia
movies. I thought time was money. I don't know. It's... It is extraordinary to look at. Ang Lee directed it, and I think gets more out of 3D than anybody in a narrative film since Avatar, really. I was not a fan of either Hugo or Tintin, and so I think this movie is...
It's very beautiful.
It's very beautiful. I think it really... It legitimizes 3D as something that a director can use in his bag of tricks, like, you know, sound or color or anything else. you know, it absolutely is worth seeing in 3D. I recommend it that way.
If you're going
to
see it.
If you're going to see it. But and you should see it in 3D just to look at it. But
I guess I could say that. I guess I would recommend it just as a visual experience.
Object,
yeah.
But, oh, man, the writing.
I don't like this movie, though, I don't think. Because, well, all right, I was bored. And I kept waiting for more digital things to get thrown at me. Like, like for example,
I mean, was that tiger ever real or is it just always digital?
Don't know. A lot of it was digital.
Yeah, and fake
that,
very
it had
well.
To do things, you know, that a real tiger, you can train a real tiger to do that kind of, you know, stuff in a boat.
Much less a real hyena.
Yeah. Like, okay, so today I watched this Azalea Banks video on YouTube, and she rides a shark out of a volcano.
And jumps over a unicorn.
And well, some dolphins chase them, and then she rides a whale.
As you do.
And when I watched that, I thought, well, how come the kid in Life of Pi didn't ride a shark out of a volcano? Because everything else
that would have been much simpler.
Everything else was digital and, you know, crazy, and
but I mean, but acknowledge though that at least it doesn't look artificial in the film, right? I mean,
the tiger.
Yeah,
sometimes it did.
Really, I bought it
a couple times. A couple times I was like, okay, this is a fake tiger.
I mean,
there were moments where I was like, okay, that's fake tiger.
If you think about it, yeah, I mean, just in terms of the logistics of it. But there was never a time that I looked at it and thought, fake. Like, I mean, it always looked like a real tiger.
Maybe.
I don't know if it was Andy Serkis wearing, you know, a ping pong ball suit or something. But, you know, I bought it. But, as beautiful it is, I wish it were a better movie.
The level of botherment that it gave me is almost equal to the level of visual pleasure it gave me.
That's well said. Yeah. I agree with that.
I know botherment isn't a word.
No, but I mean,
but
totally.
It is now.
It's that ratio. You're right. No, it's as annoying as it is to
think about.
Yeah. To deal with it on a dramatic
Stop
level.
Stop trying to teach me things about the nature of, you know, about God. Seriously, it's a story about God. I mean, they tell you that at the very beginning of the film.
Yes.
They're like, I'm going to tell you a story that will make you believe in God.
Yeah.
I'm like,
well,
no, you just actually told me a story about a tiger. And
that didn't work.
Like, the only note I took in the entire film was based on the Superman tagline of the late 70s with the Christopher Reeve Superman, you will believe a man can fly. And all I wrote in my notes was, you will believe a tiger is going to effing kill you. Because I will say that there were moments when that 3D tiger lunging at the kid made jump out of my seat.
Oh, my God. Yes, no, totally.
There are some crazy jolts in this film. Yeah. The tiger seriously surprising you and making you go, ah! So, like, don't hold on to your popcorn or your drink. I didn't have a popcorn or a drink because I was on the Fox a lot. I sat next to Gray and I went, ah! And she looked at me like, I can't believe you.
Well, I'm reminded of whichever, it was the Pauline Kael, somebody's review of 2001 referred to it as a Shaggy God story.
Oh, yeah.
That's this is about God. It's a very Shaggy God. Yeah. Yeah, so okay, fine. We'll talk about the other Thanksgiving movies when we get back. Letters?
DVDs.
Oh, DVDs, yes.
Mine is the movie I just saw this afternoon. Mm-hmm. The New Beverly screened Maurice Pialat's 1972 film, We Won't Grow Old Together.
Mm-hmm. Is that like a... what's that Taylor Swift song called?
We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together.
Ah, okay. That's different.
Here's why it's different. Not only is it different because it's a different title, but you actually believe Taylor Swift. 10 minutes into this movie, you know that the title is kind of a lie because these people are never going to break up. And you
wish they would.
You wish they would just make the break. It stars It stars Jean Yan of Godard's Weekend,
which is newly out on DVD,
And Marlene Jobert of Masculine Feminine. So both Godard stars.
Okay.
And they are, it is based on a novel that Pielat wrote.
Oh.
Sort of an autobiographical novel, which is unsettling to think about.
So he's like the Pricks of Being a Wallflower guy. He adapted his own.
We don't know to what extent the main jerk and creep in this film really is like Maurice Pielat.
Right.
For Maurice Pielat's sake, I hope that he wasn't the capital A-hole that this guy is in the film. Because he's not just emotionally abusive. He's not just verbally abusive. He's not just physically abusive. He's not just sexually abusive. He's every, like, I'm sure there are other kinds of...
leave?
I don't know, but he invented them.
That too.
Yeah. These people, he's an awful human being and she's a dummy. Like, these are the people in this film. These are the two characters.
Your classic bastard bimbo relationship, as Peter Bragg would say.
They are in the worst relationship. Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf felt more loving? Because this film, this relationship is, they are so bitterly cold to one another, where he says things to me, he says things to her like, you're ugly. Look at your nose. Look at your rat thighs. Yeah, your rat
thighs.
Your rat.
I don't know what that thighs. Means.
I don't either, but it sounds bad.
Are they covered in bristly hair.
Meanwhile, she has this rocking body, right? Because she's always without a bra. The level of nipple going on in this film is crazy. Hers are just poking through the shirts all the time. She's not wearing a bra. He's either shirtless or the shirt unbuttoned down to his navel because it's 1972. Tight clothes on everybody. Like, it is that moment in the culture when, like, letting it all hang out was a literal thing that people were doing. But they are so brutally wrong for each other. And they've been together for 6 years. And she's his mistress on top of it.
Oh,
and his wife knows about her. And and she's very sort of, like, even keeled about it. She's like, yeah, you've both ruined my life.
France.
Yeah, her parents are sort of like, we hate him. Why are you with him?
What the is wife's it? Parents or the mistress's parents?
The mistress's parents. And the mistress's parents are like, what does his wife think about all this? You're like, it's. I saw it with a friend who has French parents and who was born in France and who speaks fluent French to the point where, just like you in an Almodovar film,
he was laughing at jokes that nobody else.
Yeah, and doesn't need the subtitles.
Right.
And on the way out, he goes, "My people," completely crazy. This is a really, really, really great movie. Uh-huh. It's one of the most disturbing and unsettling relationship dramas I've maybe ever seen in my entire life. Hard to find. It is on DVD, and I know you're going to be mad at me about this.
What?
It is on DVD, but it's out of print, and it's on Region 2.
Oh, come on. That's your DVD pick, so out of print Region 2.
I just want you to go, here's what I want you to do if you're a listener. I want you to go find this movie somehow by any means necessary.
And buy a region-free DVD player.
Look,
because
you can get a cheap DVD player and hack it and make yourself an all-region.
That's what I thought. I can't hack this stupid one we just bought.
I thought you got...
No, we haven't figured it out yet.
Oh, well. In any case, you can go get a cheap DVD player and hack it, and you'll have the region-free. And, you know... Just do the homework.
Yeah,
go find
out of print region 2. That's the worst.
It.
You're the worst.
Go find it.
That's a stupid DVD pick.
If you get a chance, see this
movie.
I'm
sure it's a neat movie. But
see this movie in any way that you can, by any means necessary.
All right. My DVD pick, which is a real DVD pick of something that actually exists and people can
this
get
this is
their
a real DVD
on.
That, look, maybe people in England are listening.
Yeah,
I know we have at least two.
Great. And so now it's only out of print. You know, they don't worry about the region 2 part.
We have at least two listeners in England who can get their hands on this, I guarantee you.
Stop talking. My DVD pick this week is a total stone cold bummer. It is the Blu-ray of the Japanese anime classic Grave of the Fireflies.
Which makes you cry.
Yes.
Makes you cry a lot.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is directed by Isao Takahata, who is one of my favorite directors. He is basically the other main Studio Ghibli guy alongside Hayao Miyazaki. He did Pompoko, which I love. And this is a film about two young children in Japan in the waning days of World War II.
I like the way that you don't pronounce it Ghibli like a normal American. You pronounce it like a Japanese person. You pronounce it Ghibli.
That's how I've always seen it online.
I know, but you went that extra mile in pronouncing the name of the studio. Well, I'm not
gonna. They don't do that sketch on Saturday Night Live anymore.
The white kids who pretend to be Japanese.
The J-pop now.
The whatever. J-pop now kids. Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, Grave of the Fireflies is about two Japanese kids in the waning days of World War II. The waning days of World War II were not great times to be in Japan.
No.
It's super sad, but it's really good. So you should see it, but have Kleenex handy. And
yeah, so watch the movie about nuclear holocaust, and then watch the movie about the
French
worst
dysfunction.
French abusive relationship. Happy holidays,
Happy
everybody.
Yeah.
Look what you have to be grateful for.
You're not them.
You're not any of these people. All right, want to get to some mail?
Let's.
We are millimeters away from catching up.
Wow.
Yeah. Why won't my cursor move? Okay, here we go. Matt says, "Hey guys, I have another list. Sorry if you don't like it."
Well, that's a way to warm us up.
Here they are. Here's counting back from 10.
Okay.
Dread 3D.
Oh, God.
He wrote, "Yes, this just came out, but I love it."
So far, your prediction has come true. I don't like this list.
I have mixed feelings about Dread 3D. I would give this a halvesy.
It's a no the raid.
Yeah. Harold and Maude.
Great.
The Social Network.
Sure, great.
JFK.
And I've said this before, as long as it's the original theatrical cut, yes.
12 Angry Men.
Okay.
In the Name of the Father. Not really, yeah. A lot of poop in that movie.
And just a lot of Irish people yelling, and I remember that there's a file on it that says not to be shown to the prosecution or something. Or to the defense, and it was like, maybe you shouldn't put a big note on it. I don't know.
Punch Drunk Love.
Never seen it.
There Will Be Blood.
Love it.
This Is Not a Film.
Great.
This is, if you don't know what that is, it's the movie that came out earlier this year. It's actually a 2011 film, but it
played at Cannes last year.
It didn't get released in the United States theatrically
until this year.
Until 2012. It's from Jafar Panahi, who was under house arrest in Iran. And this is a documentary he made while under house arrest that was smuggled out of Iran in a
USB stick.
A USB stick hidden in a cake.
And it's a film about how he can't make a film.
It's a film about how he can't make a film.
And it's one of my favorite movies this year.
And The Godfather. So I'm going to say you get like an 85 on this. You're 85% of the knife, right? We're taking him down for In the Name of the Father.
And I'm not down
for
Dread.
You're not
down
for Dread 3D.
Yeah, 85. That sounds fair, sure.
To Alonzo. This is a little note that he added at the end.
Oh, boy.
To Alonzo, my apologies for hating you for giving a perfect 10 on What the Flick. I'm not sure what movie you recently gave a perfect 10
probably
to.
Probably How to Survive a Plague.
Okay. You are a talented critic. He's being nice to you. Mm-hmm. And my girlfriend says if you weren't gay, she would ask you out.
Aww.
Although she is 16 and you are like 47.
I'm 45. Thank you very much. But I'll take the compliment anyway.
You're super old.
So old.
And a 16-year-old girl thinks you're adorable.
Well, there you go.
She's right.
So
you're pretty adorable.
So if
I'm 48.
I'm just going to cast a line out here. The only people that objected to my giving a 10 to that movie on YouTube tended to be kind of homophobic about it. I'm not saying that's what happened here. I'm just saying that's what most of the bad response seemed to be. But whatever.
I'm sure he wasn't the homophobe.
Apology.
Why would he listen to this show?
Apology accepted.
The show hosted by two gays. Why would he listen to this show?
Because his girlfriend is into it, obviously.
Well, yeah. This is from Richard. David Alonso, I love your show.
And
what it has taught me.
Okay.
About life and love.
I bet, yes.
Without it, I never would have known that Tyler Perry movies are actually funny. Or that Magic Mike was about economic stagnation instead of schlongs. My road to eventual Linoleum Knife listenership started a few years back with Exile in Guyville, which I purchased after seeing it on the shelf at my local Borders bookstore, which is now a vacant retail space. The subtitle, as you know, includes the F word.
Not that F word.
The gay slur F word.
The other one, yes.
And since I love books that remind me of high school, I read it immediately. Eventually, I heard about the podcast and began listening to it. It is very funny.
Oh, thanks.
Without disclaimer, here is my list. Clue.
Love it.
Now you're just sucking up to Alonso
Duralde. Oh, come on. Clue's fun. And
it's okay.
And I met Leslie Ann Warren this week, and she says that whenever she meets anybody in their 20s, that's all they ever talk about is Clue.
Yeah. Yes. High Plains Drifter, good choice.
Yeah.
Desperate Living. The Herod Experiment. I've never seen that.
Don Johnson, right?
I don't remember.
Tippy Hedren.
I know it exists.
I think I've seen it.
I was a kid when it came out.
Yes, okay. No, there was.
It was a grown-up movie.
There was the Herod Experiment, and then there was a sequel called Herod Summer. But yeah, okay. I know. Yeah, all right. It's actually, I think the Herod Experiment is in the book Bad Movies We Love.
Oh, is it?
But it's, you know, it's the movie where Tippy Hedren tries having sex with Don Johnson, and then he would later marry her daughter. So. Who doesn't love that? Go on.
The 1984 Red Dawn.
Yeah. We'll be talking about the 2012 or 2008 or whatever the hell they actually shot that thing, and it's now finally coming out, Red Dawn, when we're back after Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Sunset Boulevard.
Great.
The Big Parade.
King Vidor.
Yeah, 1925.
Silent film silent, I have not seen.
Yeah, but 1925 silent film.
I have always been told that it's really great.
I have not seen it either. And
we should do that.
We should.
You are teaching us.
Yes, thank you, Richard, for all that you are teaching us. The Godfather, now Voyager.
Oh, yes.
Metropolis.
Great.
Also, I encourage Dave to eat more often during the show. I seem to remember the two of you arguing about him eating potato chips in front of his mic at one point, and it was a highlight for me. Sadly, Richard, you are the only person that has weighed in positively.
Pro-eating.
On anyone eating anything in front of any microphones, period. I was so shamed out of doing it by so many people that it will never happen again. And I believe that we probably permanently lost listeners who never got to hear me apologize for doing it after the fact.
Yeah, that's one of those knife scraping across the plate things for certain people.
Yeah, we're the never sound doing. Of chewing we is are just never like ever doing that
anathema,
again.
Unfortunately, but on the upside, you are 100% knife.
Yes, you didn't like Red Dawn 1984.
Oh yeah, right.
I liked it enough, and I liked Clue enough.
90.
We'll give you a 90. You got a 95. Okay.
Yeah.
You're 95%.
It's the spirit of the season I'm feeling giving.
Here's an email. Subject line, Imogen Poots.
I don't know. Does she?
It's from Chris. I just have to say that I am totally with Dave on this one. The name Imogen Poots will never make me do anything but laugh. Completely unpretentious asides like this are why I listen to the show every week. Poots, comma, Chris. And poots to you, Chris.
Yes, that's a great way to sign off on a letter. I like it.
Okay. Eric has given us a list of Christmas movies, top 10 Christmas movies. So let's just do it.
You want it? Okay.
Well, it's almost time.
I'm fine. Great.
It's the most wonderful time of the year already.
By cracky.
Number one, Alistair Sims, A Christmas Carol.
Okay, yeah.
Two, It's a Wonderful Life.
Sure.
Three, The Patrick Stewart, A Christmas Carol.
Okay.
Four, A Christmas Story.
Yeah.
Five, White Christmas. Six, The Reginald Owens, A Christmas Carol.
Okay, now come on.
Look, man. He's got what he likes.
All right.
Love Actually. Okay, here's the thing. The more times every... Okay, first, I'm going to confess. I watch Love Actually every single year. I'm not proud of that. Because every single year that I watch it, I learn more and more that it's just not very good.
Well, I recently did the Wrap has been doing these screenings of Oscar season movies, and they asked me to moderate a Q&A with Rodrigo Santoro after the Brazilian soccer movie Eleno that he stars in, and I brought up Love Actually, and he says that movie is always on because people are always telling me that they just saw it. I said, oh yeah, there's a channel that doesn't show anything else, but Love Actually, but yeah, he says that's everybody's go to movie with him. So
I got it. It is comforting. In the same way that my other favorite Christmas movies are comforting. Mm. Like, I feel a sense of well-being.
It's upscale watching, and cozy.
I feel a sense of well-being watching. Like, I'm enveloped in a cashmere robe from the Garnet Hill catalog.
It is bedecked in gold and silver, that movie.
And it's 100% BS.
Oh, yeah. There are at least four subplots about men falling in love with their employees.
More than that, I think. it is a crazy mess of a movie that I can't get enough of.
I hear you.
Bad Santa.
Mm.
Scrooge.
Great. That's my
Albert Finney.
Yes.
Musical.
My personal favorite of the
Christmas. And number 10, the Seymour Hicks Christmas Carol.
Oh, come on.
Look, this is what he's into.
Look, you could do better than the Seymour. The George C. Scott one.
The Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol.
The Mr. Magoo one. The Tori Spelling one, frankly, is better than the Seymour Hicks one. But
Scrooged.
Nonetheless, okay, fine.
Yeah.
And is that it? Is that all 10?
A Charlie Brown Christmas would be way up high if it were a movie.
Right.
and there are other non-movie things that we watch faithfully every year. I like Santa versus the Snowman.
That's a special.
I don't know what that is.
That's a special that came up like in the 90s. I remember. I've still never seen it, but it actually the animation studio that created it was in Dallas at the time. It was a big deal. What are we rating Christmas lists? They're not linoleum. They're not life. They're not knife. Right. 100% wreath. What?
I don't know that you can rate a Christmas list because it's such a personal, sentimental kind of thing.
True.
We're not really talking about, you know, movies that, maybe with the exception of It's a Wonderful Life or the Alistair Sims Christmas Carol or the Reginald Owens Christmas Carol. We're not really talking about movies that are especially like memorable cinematically, you know?
Well, A Christmas Story is a good nostalgia.
White Christmas has its moments, but
it's 100% merry.
What if we just don't bother?
Okay, fine.
Rating the Christmas lists.
Speaking of Christmas,
and we're not movies, encouraging you to send in your Christmas list movies. You can if you want.
Yeah. I don't see why not. And speaking of Christmas movies, just a quick reminder to folks that my book, How to Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, is available once again this holiday season. And if you would like to pick up an autographed copy for your own library or to give us a gift, drop us a line at linoleumpodcast.
Better buy it.
At gmail.com.
Oh, we don't want you listening to the show anymore.
Stop.
Pay money. Buy it.
Linoleumpodcast@gmail.com will tell you how to order one. And speaking of holiday shopping, every week on the Linoleum Knife page on Facebook, we post the Amazon links to our DVD picks of that week's show. Even if you're not buying the DVDs, if you're doing any shopping on Amazon, if you start from that link off of our Linoleum Knife page on Facebook and then go off and buy whatever, we get a nice little kickback, and it would be lovely if you would do that. We'd appreciate it.
And here is a letter that is not a list. This is business related. Oh. So I understand if, for legal reasons, you can't discuss it. This is from Ben. Uh-huh. You can't discuss it or just prefer not to answer.
Is he suing us?
I don't know. Let's find out. You fellas get paid when somebody clicks a link to your reviews and articles, correct? No.
No.
That is not how it works.
We get paid anyway, but...
We get salaries.
It ensures our job security.
Yeah. Like, we get paid X amount of money each month for reviewing films.
Yes.
It's not per click or anything like that.
But they pay attention as to what clicks and what
websites, unlike back in the day when circulation numbers dictated, you know, how successful a thing was.
For magazines.
They can now pinpoint... You know, like, who is the most popular writer on a website?
Yeah.
You know, so...
And where did they click from?
And where did they click from? I always tell my friends, you know, like, you don't have to read the review. Just give me that click.
Yeah.
Give me that click.
Yeah, we're not going to make any more money off the click, but when our editors are looking at the stats of who's coming to the site and what's getting read, it helps if we're being read.
So you better buy that book. You better click on everything I write.
Is that the whole letter?
Hang on. Blah, 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 blah. Is it the actual click that equals money, or do we have to be there for X amount of time? Now, I don't know if you have to be there for X amount of time.
You know, I think they do. They pay attention sometimes to, like, how long people stay on the site or how long they pay on the page, but they're mainly looking at the click.
Like, if it's a movie I really have no intentions of ever seeing, do I need to stay on the review for 5 minutes? So the tracking... He's being very specific about this. So the tracking program thing thinks I'm actually reading it? Look, man, I wrote that review. Read it. I'm great.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you're going to see the movie or not. Our deathless prose is what you should be going
deathless. That's 5 minutes I could be using to look at vintage pictures of cats dressed up in old-timey sporting outfits.
You have many tabs. You can open several.
Question number two. It's coming up on holiday baking time. If someone were to find themselves with an extra batch or two of yummy treats, what would be an address of a place where those could be sent? we'll tell him that off the mic. But I love the idea of being sent treats. Treats and gifts. It is Christmas time, after all. Time for treats and gifts for your favorite podcaster. Buying the book. Called Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. That's it. That is all the questions that we have. That's you do not, unless you have email waiting in.
No, I just checked.
You do not?
Uh-uh.
We are caught
up
with mail, other than some Christmas movie lists
that are coming up later on. Yeah. Also, coming up a couple of times in December on TECM, and we'll talk about it more as we get closer, and I'll be posting the links on the Linoleum Knife page on Facebook. They are rerunning a special that I was on last year called A Night at the Movies, Merry Christmas. So, you know, look for that.
How would they find it in their TiVo?
It's under, the show is called, it's a series, I guess, called A Night at the Movies. And then the episode title would be Merry Christmas. So if you put A Night at the Movies into your TiVo, it'll pop up on TCM. It's airing, I think, twice in December, so... And I guess...
And you're very good in it.
Thank you. And I believe the History Channel will probably be rerunning...
of course they will.
The Real Story of Christmas, which I'm on as well, so...
There's no doubt in my mind that they will be rerunning that.
So if you want if you want pictures of my talking face to go with this podcast...
And you do.
So we're wrapping up.
Then you write to TCM and you tell them how much you love that Alonzo Durrell.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Happy Thanksgiving.
Indeed, yes.
We are thankful that we get to do this show every week and that our audience seems to be climbing from
growing
week to week.
By person by person.
Yeah, and so we're
one by one.
We are thankful for you, and we are thankful for you.
Probably two by one, because I bet we lose one for every two we get.
That's quite possible. But we're thankful to you for listening to the show, for talking to your friends about the show, for reviewing the show at iTunes, if you've done that, or liking our Facebook page, or following us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, or checking into the show on GetGlue.com.
Or
streaming us on Stitcher, or streaming us on TheLounge.com.
Or
buying my book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
Or
what?
I don't know. I just kept saying or. I assumed you had more things that you wanted people to accomplish.
We are also thankful for our friends in the podcast universe, The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli. Cooking with Malcolm Ingram is going to have a second episode because I'm going to be on it.
All right.
I basically contacted him and I said, you got to have a second episode. You need to interview me about Christmas movies. So that's, we're gonna tape that this next week.
Are you sure you're going to tape it this week?
Yes.
It's a go.
It is a go. Right. Thunderbirds are go. It's going to happen.
I'll believe this when I see it near it.
You'll see it. Fat Guys at the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Throwing Shade, Team Jack, The Schmoes Know, The B-Movies Podcast, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash with That Chris Gore, The Game Night Guys, which will also be appearing on in the next couple of weeks, and Secretly Timid. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great Thanksgiving. Don't drink and drive, and we'll catch you next time.
Don't drink and drive.
It just seemed like a holiday message.
Yeah, that's a good... Yeah, don't drink and drive.
Yeah, or are you going to be pro that or something?
No.
Okay, fine then.
I just thought it was kind of a funny thing to say. Goodbye.